KFK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Peter King in Orlando. We're just under 4 hours away from a United Auto Workers strike deadline. Among the demands, a 40% raise over the next 4 years. Here's correspondent Chris Van Cleve.
A Friday strike would leave third-generation auto worker Zach Van Vliet living off $500 a week in strike pay, which doesn't go far for a family of four.
How long until you start to really feel that pinch?
Honestly, I don't think it would take long at all. If we do go out, how long is it going to take to get a deal?
The UAW says without a deal, it will strike key plants belonging to all three automakers and then expand if necessary.
It's a dangerous thing to say you're going to strike just some plants but not others, because that's not how the industry can operate. And you will see more than just those plants shut down.
President Biden's son Hunter faces criminal charges for lying about his drug use when he bought a gun in 2018. CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson says his defense could involve the Second Amendment.
What Hunter Biden is going to say is, well, you're charging me under a law that says that I needed to fill out this form, and you're charging me under a law that says as a drug user, I couldn't possess this gun. But I don't know if those laws can be on the books at all.
Hurricane Lee is expected to be a tropical storm when it makes landfall Saturday. Storm watches and warnings are up along the New England coast and for Nova Scotia, which is expected to get the worst. Portland, Maine, Harbor Master Kevin Battle is watching closely.
We've had this threat before in the past, and then we've been lucky in the past. Eventually, luck's going to run out and it's going to hit us. This may very well hit us.
Swing state Wisconsin is swinging toward a court battle after the Republican-controlled Senate voted to fire the state's top elections official. Here's reporter Bruce Marcus.
Megan Wolf, who heads the state's nonpartisan elections commission, was targeted by election deniers. They claim she helped rig the 2020 presidential election. Joe Biden was certified the winner in that race over Donald Trump by nearly 21,000. Votes. So Senate Democrats oppose the Republicans' move. Milwaukee Senator Chris Larson.
Anytime they get a result or a ruling they don't like, they want to overturn elections, they want to throw people out.
So a court fight is expected. It could determine how the state's 2024 presidential election is administered.
The death toll is past 11,000 after the floods in eastern Libya. Almost 11,000 people are unaccounted for. Civil engineer Kasim Majoub says months ago he saw cracks in the dams that burst open in a storm.
In July, I was on a visit to the dam. The cracks and the failure showed by the naked eye. You didn't have even to measure it.
The results catastrophic. This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Beginning next week, a trip south across the state line won't be necessary for those looking to get an abortion in Wisconsin.
This Monday, September 18th, Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin will resume abortion care at our Water Street Health Center in Milwaukee, and in Madison at our Madison East Health Center.
The Planned Parenthood Water Street location in Milwaukee is already scheduling visits online. While the legal challenge to the old law is far from resolved, the interpretation from the judge is that the language does not apply to abortion care needed by a woman. Waukesha-based Generac is building in Beaver Dam. The company has plans to establish a new 320,000-square-foot plant in Beaver Dam, pending approval from the city. Construction is expected to start this year, potentially providing employment for up to 400 people. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Love your hometown? Don't miss the Devil's Advocates radio show on the road for the very first Fall in Love Hometown Tour 2023.
We will be broadcasting from northern Wisconsin, Chippewa Falls.
That's right. Find Mike and Dom broadcasting live from Loopy's Grill and Saloon overlooking the river in Chippewa Falls. Join them there starting at 4 p.m.
Road trip! With the Devil's Advocates Fall in Love Hometown Tour 2023 on your local Civic Media radio station and the app.
Red Delicious, Honeycrisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens.
Today, I am talking to the owner of Funky Fresh Spring Rolls, my friend Truman McGee. From an environmentally friendly perspective, the fact that it's frozen means that it's not going to waste.
I am a serial strawberry abuser. If you're a fruit and you're watching this, stay away from me, okay? Do not jump in my shopping cart because I will let you die.
Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
Heating systems starting in 2024.
Good.
Critics say the law's targets were watered down, but it will still cut emissions from the home heating sector by nearly two-thirds. And finally, encouraging news for building electrification. A new study finds that even in sub-zero temperatures, all electric heat pumps actually outperform fossil fuels. Even at temperatures down to minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit, electric heat pumps are twice as efficient and cheaper than oil and gas heating systems. And that may be why in Norway, electric heat pumps today make up almost all heating installations.
And beginning next year, a whole bunch of Americans are going to be able to put heat pumps into their own homes and have them paid for under the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yep.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Going to start off with a little fun. Little entertainment. You may remember over the last couple days, we've been talking about this guy, this Tim Gerner. Tim, you know, came out and you know, said what he was thinking, said what he was feeling. You know, kind of repeated what was being said in the country clubs, in the CEO suites. You know, that, hey, we got to get those workers back in place. We need, you know, we need a massive unemployment. We need pain and suffering because, you know what? Those people, they got to know who's in charge. They got to know that we're in charge, and they got to know that we can do to them anything we want at any time. And look, we've been getting some fun out of this the last couple of days. And look, it's caught on. A lot of people have seen this and are now going, well, wait a second. Did he just say what we think he said? Answer, yes. So today, Tim Gerner, owner of Gerner, guy who's worth over $500 million, issued a social media post. He says in his social media post, at the AFR Property Summit this week, I made some remarks about unemployment and productivity in Australia that I deeply, deeply regret and were wrong. There are clearly important conversations to have in this moment of high inflation, pricing pressures on housing and rentals due to lack of supply, and other costs of living issues. My comments were deeply
insensitive to employees, tradies, and their families across Australia who are affected by these cost of living pressures and job losses. I want to be clear. I do appreciate that when someone loses their job, it has a profound impact on them and their families, and I sincerely regret that my words did not convey empathy for those in that situation. So sorry. Now, this is clearly written by a crisis management person. I highly doubt Tim sat down and put pen to paper and dreamt this up on his own. Now, to be fair, it's better than most. When crisis management people come in and they do this kind of stuff, it's usually, you know, it goes along the lines of, you know, I'm sorry you were offended by what was said, but, you know, and never really address the issue. Now, understand, he's saying, you know, I'm sorry that I didn't convey my empathy. And I'm going, no, you didn't. You were very clear, very concise. And it's one of those things where you go, it's worth hearing Tim's words again, because ultimately, I'm not buying. And look, Tim, if you're listening, please call in. I want to hear your apology. I want to hear this in your own words and in your own voice. I would love to have you come and share your deep sympathy and your empathy. I would love to hear that, because I know it doesn't exist. But here's what Tim had to say. And again, I don't think I'm buying. But here's what Tim had to say that got him in a little bit of hot water.
I think the problem that we've had is that we have people decided they didn't really want to work so much anymore through COVID, and that has had a massive issue on productivity. You know, tradies have definitely pulled back on productivity. You know, they have been paid a lot to do not too much in the last few years, and we need to see that change. We need to see unemployment rise. Unemployment has to jump 40-50% in my view. We need to see pain in the economy. We need to remind people that they work for the employer, not the other way around. I mean, there's been a systematic change where employees feel the employer is extremely lucky to have them, as opposed to the other way around. So it's a dynamic that has to change. We've got to kill that attitude, and that has to come through hurting the economy, which is what the whole global, you know, the world is trying to do. The governments around the world are trying to increase unemployment to get that to some sort of normality. And we're seeing it. I think every employer now is seeing it. I mean, there is definitely massive layoffs going off. People might not be talking about it, but people are definitely laying people off, and we're starting to see less arrogance in the employment market, and that has to continue because that will cascade across.
Now, does it sound like the statement? Does that sound like the empathy? Does it sound like him caring about families? Answer, no. And look, you know, someone paid attention. And look, I have been looking around for people covering this. None of the mainstream corporate controlled media has picked this up at all, as far as I can tell. We're one of the only programs that bothered to play this, because this is what they think. It's I know, but Rick, that's just, you know, a CEO, a rich guy in Australia. No, right here on American television. Today, Jim Cramer talking about the UAW, you know, basically saying that, you know, if the workers strike, here's his solution. Shut down the entire auto industry, move to Mexico, pay the Mexicans $5 an hour, and screw those working people. Put them in their place. This is exactly what the Jim Cramers of the world have been saying and getting away with on corporate-controlled media daily. It's not surprising to me that Cramer is someone who's going to beat up on workers. Not at all. It's not surprising to me that the business channels are figuring out how to ensure that, well, corporate America is fat and happy and well-heeled, especially on a day like today when it was announced that Stellantis, one of the big three, a big share buyback, €500 million. Now, we're literally ticking down minutes to a potential strike. You think, you know, in the days leading up to a potential strike, rubbing it in the workers' faces that you're going to take a stock buyback of over $500 million, $500 million in stock buybacks. That's admitting, hey, we've got no productive use for this money. We can't invest in new equipment. We can't invest in our workers. We can't, nothing. It's for us. And yes, you working people, you created that wealth through your labor, but it's ours. And this is part of a €1.5 billion stock buyback plan. This is an awful lot of money. This could do everything the UAW wants and then multiples. But the Jim Cramers of the world, the Tim Gerners of the world, it's all about keeping working people in their place. And I've been saying this for years. You know, we all think we're going to be the rich guy. And today I was sitting thinking about my uncle. My uncle passed last year, but he was a very wealthy guy. He started a business from scratch. He was one of those guys back in the 60s, you know, started a small business and it grew into something pretty substantial. And he was genuinely angered by the fact that he didn't believe his workers appreciated him enough. Not that the wealth that he was able to create was because of all of those workers. That was lost on him. But that he built this, he alone, without all of those people that dedicated their lives, their blood, their sweat, their tears, none of that. And this is, you know, one of these moments where you have to step back and look at the reality of where we are. We are most certainly in a which side are you on moment. Now, I think about my uncle who started his business back in the 60s when we had a 92% top marginal tax rate before Kennedy lowered it. We were a more equal society. You didn't have CEOs making 200, 300, 400, 1,000, 5,000 times what the average worker makes. We were a closer to reality society. And yet, thanks to the tax cut fetish of Republicans and corporate Democrats, we've now created the two Americas that John Edwards talked about back in 2004 and that we've been heading towards for a very long time. Inequality is at an incredibly high level. You know, and you just go, when do we say enough? And it comes back down to policy. It comes back down to electing people into political office who don't think like the Gerners and the Cramers and the corporatists. Actual working people. Because you know what Democrats are doing right now? In California, no, you know what the California Democrats did? In the Senate, they just passed a bill to extend unemployment benefits to workers who have been on strike for more than 2 weeks. Hello, Writers Guild. Hello, Screen Actors. That's you. This is helping working people. And I keep coming back to this. We need people who are going to stand up, step forward, and actually do the work of helping people. And understand, our corporate masters, this is what Gerner and Cramer say is exactly what they think of us. We're tools, we're negatives on a balance sheet, we're to be used and discarded at will. And gotten as cheaply as possible. The fact that Cramer, without blushing, said, I'd go to Mexico. I'd shut down for 2 years. I'd go to Mexico. I'd show them, those workers, how dare they want a better life for their children, want health care, want some bit of retirement security. How dare they want what we all grew up believing was the American dream. How dare they? It's disgraceful what we've allowed to get over our airwaves. It's disgraceful to people that we've put into political power, and it's about time that you, me, us, we the working people, say enough is enough. It's insane. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We'll be right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I'll tell you, it's quite angering and frustrating to hear people like Kramer spewing on just... it's where we are, though, folks. Let's quick go to the phones. We've got Steve from Chicago on line one. Steve, how are you?
Fine, thank you. And I do think that it's really an important topic because this matters to Americans, unlike so many of the other issues that, you know, we talk about. These are our kitchen table issues. And where American workers stand in terms of what kind of benefits they have, you know, what the UAW wants, you know, is a return, quite frankly, it's not something revolutionary. It's a return to what they had in the 1950s and 60s and part of the 70s. You know, I mean, things like pensions, it used to be commonplace, you know, that what workers made was part and parcel of function of how well the company was doing. You know, and that's how unions negotiate it. So, you know, what Ford's doing this well, GM's doing this well, you know, yes, it's time to share some of the wealth. You know, so, and this idea of things like cost of living increases. Now, I didn't believe for a moment, I mean, people are free to disagree with me, that the union actually was hoping they were going to get a 40% raise, but now they're at 20%. That's a bargaining tactic, I would argue. You save 40 and then, you know, you get something much more reasonable.
Yep.
I also don't think anybody is taking terribly seriously the idea of a 32-hour work week. That, I think, is something that needs to happen on a national level. It can't happen within a singular industry, especially one that's the big three in America. But let's face it, I mean, they do sell some trucks and a few other things, but by and large, the big three are a fraction of the automobile industry that they used to be. I mean, the big automobile industries, in terms of the companies that define them, Toyota and Volkswagen, those are the big companies globally. So the American automobile industry, again, is a shadow of its former self. So if we're going to do this, we need to make sure that all the cars that are being produced by other people, other companies and so forth, are on the same page as we are. And it has to go across industries. It can't just be, you know, the automobile industry. But having said that, it's an important start. It's just a way to say to people that, you know, because of technology, since 1980, we doubled productivity, and then we doubled it again. Well, I mean, has the average American seen their wages quadruple? And we've discussed this before. No, instead, we've added people from the family to the workforce and then added some more of them, all in an effort to try and say, well, you know, this is what Americans are making today versus what they were making in 1970. Well, wait, that was when one person was working. Now you have two full-time employees, and sometimes somebody has to have another part-time job on the weekends. So that's 2.5 jobs for someone to keep up with what one person used to make in 1970.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's about time that, again, we stood up and said that, okay, we're not asking that you people, you know, live next to the guy who works on the assembly line if you're the CEO. Okay, yeah, you still get to make a lot of money, just not the absurd amounts that you're currently making. Shareholders get to make nice profits, but you're going to have to pay more of that in terms of taxes, because you have to give something back to the system that allowed you to make these profits. I have never met anybody. I've had this intellectual exercise, you know, going for many decades with people. Like, fine, show me where you made your money where it's an island unto itself and you don't know anything to the American taxpayer, our institutions, everything that allowed you to make that money. And I'll let you have that argument you won, that you can keep your money. But nobody's been able to find some endeavor in which that has actually happened. Everybody made money here because government protects them, because this is a safe place to do business, a safe place to invest. You know, you can go to some country that's the Wild West and invest there. Your money would be gone tomorrow. Who are you going to go to?
Yeah.
You know, for recompense. But here, you know, we actually take care of you. We make sure that something is going, that someone's going to protect you. The casinos in Las Vegas faced cyber attack in the last several days. The Justice Department is all over it. Now, I run a business. I seriously doubt that if I was hacked, I could get the Justice Department to pay as much attention to me. But, you know, this is the America in which we live. There are literally people like the gentleman you were referring to who just regard us in the same way that the lords used to regard us. You know, that you're just the feudal peasants. You're here to serve us, to make us as much as you can, and that's all you are. You're just a means to an end for us to enrich ourselves. And it's only been through hundreds and hundreds of years of incremental progress that we've been able to sort of eke out a little piece of security for the people who are actually doing the work in these societies. And now, and every time that's happened in the 1930s, the 1960s, every time we've moved forward, you know, you get this swing in which people will move, or will try and move the ball back in the other direction. And that's why you get all of the fun. I've worked with people from the Heritage Foundation, AEI, Cato. These are arch-conservative think tanks that were created specifically to counter the arguments that were being made by reasonable researchers and economists who were saying that, you know what, this system is unsustainable, it's unfair, it's corrupt. And so basically, you know, the right came up with their own version of think tanks and paid off a bunch of people with advanced degrees in my field just to basically lie and say what they wanted to hear. We'll give you $250,000. Where are you going to make that in the university?
Yeah.
Just come
they
up
created
with
their own reality, their alternative facts.
Yeah. Exactly. And so they, because average people don't understand or read research, they then will say, well, okay, this is the Progressive Policy Institute and what they have. Well, okay, well, this is what Cato has, and it says something completely different. Wait. Okay, you haven't read one thing with regard to Cato's methodology, how they're arriving at their conclusions, because, again, the average American doesn't have that background. So, you know, it's the same thing with the Hunter Biden case and Joe Biden and whatnot. It's an attempt to say, well, of course, I mean, Donald Trump is under indictment, but so is Joe Biden. He's in trouble. Look, they're investigating him as well, as if there's an equivalence there. That's all this is.
No, you're spot on accurate. Couldn't have said it better myself, Steve.
Thank you. Take care.
Appreciate it. No, I mean, and look, you know, when Steve talking about, you know, Cato and all those places, the thing that they do masterfully, I mean, you have to give them credit. When they built the Heritage Foundation and the whole state policy network, where there's a think tank in every state that can dream up bad policy in every state, and then you've got all of the media that ties into that, and all of the book sales, and all the they've created their own fact universe, and they have this incestuous pool of their ideological research that they then cross cite, and it all looks prim and proper. And it's all built on a pile of steaming, you know what. And, you know, it's no wonder the president is going to be giving a speech on the threats to democracy in the coming weeks. He plans to deliver the speech following the second Republican primary debate, which I guess is scheduled for September 27th. And you wonder, you go, well, democracy under assault. Look what happened on January 6th. Look at this whole big lie thing. Look at all of the right-wing narrative that's out there. And you look at what just happened in Wisconsin, where you've got the Republicans who evidently voted to fire the elections director, a nonpartisan person. We're going to take it over. You know, we're going to decide how this is going to work. And it's one of those things that makes you go, at what point do Democrats, who don't have much power in the legislature in Wisconsin, use this to say, hey, look, voters, it's time to start throwing some of these bums out. It's time to actually vote for people who are going to do some positive things. Now, you know, there were, you know, it was, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, you had Democrats in Wisconsin coming out with a package of bills. I think it was a package of 10 bills that are going to restore workers' rights, are going to begin to undo all of the terrible of the Scott Walker era. You know, things like undoing right to work, restoring collective bargaining for public sector workers, reinstating the prevailing wage law, bringing back project labor agreements on local projects and state projects, and give local municipalities the ability to raise minimum wages, to bring ordinances for paid sick time or vacation time, restoring democracy. Who would have thought? And it's one of these things where, again, I keep telling my Democratic friends, you need to go out there and give voters a reason to vote for you. And that reason is, we're going to make your lives better. Because understand, the Jim Cramers of the world, the Tim Gurners of the world, these folks, they're not anomalies. This is the wealth class. This is the corporate class. And this is the Republican Party, who has always hated working people. Look at what they do. So for me, we're in this moment. Do you believe in democracy? Do you believe in workplace democracy? Then maybe, my good friends in Wisconsin, maybe you start throwing some of these bums out who are really making a sham of your system. It's quite interesting to watch as they dismantle the democratic institutions and consolidate power, gerrymandering, not listening to the courts when the courts say, hey, these are unconstitutional maps, firing, the nonpartisan election person. We don't need it. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1917. That was the day Illinois Governor Frank Loudon hoped to meet with striking streetcarmen in an effort to end their strike. Transit workers in Springfield, the state's capital, had been off the job since July 25th. But the strike had gained so much support that Springfield had now erupted into a full-blown general strike. According to the Sangamon County Historical Society, thousands of union members shut down mines, railroads, bakeries, restaurants, laundries, and construction sites following the violent crackdown of a pro-labor march by state police and militia. The march had been scheduled for September 9th. The union hoped to show support for the striking streetcarmen after a number of clashes between strikers and state militia. After they were denied a permit, many of the 50 or so unions decided to march anyway and were attacked. Some were shot. More than 40 suffered bayonet-inflicted injuries. By the 11th, most everyone in Springfield had walked off the job. Striking women shoe factory workers stopped a streetcar, pulling the scab drivers off by force. By the end of the week, as many as 12,000 members of 34 unions in the city were on strike. When telephone operators walked off the job, they paralyzed communications of the scab streetcar drivers and the state National Guardsmen. The streetcar strikers refused to meet with the governor until troops were withdrawn from the city. The governor insisted disloyal, pro-German forces were at fault for the labor troubles. By the 16th, the streetcarmen agreed to negotiate and the general strike was called off. But the company refused to meet striker demands for recognition and higher wages, or even take them back. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Back to school. Bright-eyed youngsters are now back in our public classrooms, filled with questions about the world around them. Questions like, what happened to our school library, and where did our librarians go? Sadly, these wholly beneficial, caring educators are being dumped in school trash bins by loopy right-wing ideologues who are out to impose their bigotry and ignorance on America. They've been on a rampage of banning books and demonizing teachers, but now the extremists are saying, that's not stupid enough. Let's also launch a witch hunt against librarians. This authoritarian assault, funded by a clique of far-right billionaires and coordinated by their front groups, has been popping off across the country. But leave it to Texas Governor Greg Abbott to push it from extreme to totalitarianism. He has unilaterally seized control of Houston's school district, the largest, most diverse in Texas, installing his own whip-cracking dictatorial overseer. Mike Miles, a former Army Ranger and CEO of a corporate school chain, promptly decreed that to improve reading scores in his district, he would first eliminate librarians from 28 schools in Black and Latino neighborhoods and, second, turn their libraries into centers where students who misbehave will be disciplined. Also, Abbott's education czar demands that all teachers there must reapply for their jobs, agree to follow a centrally scripted curriculum, and be monitored by classroom cameras. Of course, elimination of independent educational resources and regimentation of instruction will reduce schools to state institutions for obedience training. This is Jim Hightower saying, and that's the point. The GOP's push to remake education is a billionaire's wet dream of a compliant, subservient workforce. Don't ask questions, just keep pulling that plow.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got an email from Janice in Wisconsin asking me why I never talk about Lauren Boebert anymore. And look, I've tried to get away from Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Three Names because I'm tired of the craziness. And yes, I know everyone wants to hear about Boebert getting thrown out of Beetlejuice and acting like the trailer trash that she is. But I'm just not interested in it. It's who she is. It's what we expect of her. I'm kind of tired of it. I've been waiting all day for my next guest to come on because I've got a bone to pick. Very, very not happy. That's why I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come share some thoughts. She's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
What the heck did I do?
I gotta take a, you got this View story here. and I'm look, yesterday we talked about Drew Barrymore scabbing on the Writers Guild, and if I don't go and look at your site like I do every day, and there's the View, the scab View, right there front and center. I'm sorry, I'm having a problem, Sarah.
Dude, I totally forgot about that. Yeah, the View writers have actually come out against that. I want to say it was like last week, I think they came back from a really long break, and they actually have been doing it the whole time. Like before they took the summer break, they were doing it before, and like every single episode they would say, you know, we don't have any writers, we're just here kind of shooting the breeze or whatever. So I don't know. I mean,
at least two of them
are SAG. None of them could possibly be Writers Guild. But like Sunny and Alyssa Farah Griffin, like they're not SAG people. They're like journalists.
But you would think that Whoopi and Joy and all the other ones would go, look, we're going to stand in solidarity with our writers.
They absolutely should be.
Buy for a second that there's no one writing their material. I don't think they're that smart.
Or at the very least, like if you're going to scab, then you need to be given like half your paycheck over to help these people.
So that's where I had to start. I saw that and I'm kind of miffed in this moment.
No, I feel you for sure. I mean, especially since there are two actual union members that I can confirm, like absolutely know for sure that Joy and Whoopi are SAG members. The others, I don't know which guild, and like if there would be communications workers, but I doubt they're in a union at all.
Well, if they're on a union represented show, don't they have to be members? I mean, Rush Limbaugh was a union member.
You know, I don't know. I don't know how that works because I mean, they're ABC, they're Disney, and they're talent, so they should be something.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it's necessarily SAG.
Now they can go up there and they can, you know, sing and dance and slap each other around or, you know, wrestle or whatever they want. But when they start, you know, taking other people's words and putting it into their mouths, someone wrote that.
Yeah. And that's apparently how the show typically works, is they have a whole writer's room that helps, you know, helps them workshop stuff that they want to say and, you know, helps them workshop their jokes. Frankly, I don't see the difference.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on. But
whoopee.
They should be donating their salaries to their writers for sure. Like have you seen the late night guys are doing this this podcast, the Strike Force 5? And so they're doing this big podcast where they basically like just all hang out and talk together, and it's all an effort to raise money for their writers. So at the very least, it's like, okay, there are people that are doing cool things to help their writers out, and that's not what's happening here.
We talked yesterday about Drew Barrymore, who doesn't need the money. I mean, I got unless she's got a bad coke problem that none of us know about, and she's, you know, she sniffed all of her wealth away. This is someone who doesn't need the paycheck. So to go and to do this show and stick it to her writers, who eventually will come back, that's just, I don't know, that's just, it's a bridge too far. And it's one of those things that she doesn't have to do.
Yeah, that's different. That's a totally weird thing where it's just like, dude, and maybe she does have a coke habit, but you know, she's looks a lot, she'd be a lot skinnier, I feel like, if she did.
Oh, fat shaming. That's not nice.
No, I mean, it's not that so much that she's big or anything. She's just, you know, she curvy.
All right, there you go. There's nothing
wrong
with
that. She got boobs.
Nothing wrong with that. But I just had to get that off my chest before we move on to Trailer Trash Barbie. Because I thought this would be something to bring up. Is this a big deal? Are we surprised that Gun Fetish Barbie was you know vaping in a woman's face at a Beetlejuice theater play and singing along and being just an obnoxious little snot? Are we at all surprised by any of that?
It wasn't just smoke, like vaping in a woman's face. It was a pregnant woman.
Yeah, well, you know.
I'm just saying, you gonna be pro-life and tell me that you're gonna vape in some pregnant lady's face? Come on.
Yeah.
My favorite part about this story is that she screamed, "Do you know who I am?"
Yeah, that's. And you guys, look at the videos. You could actually see her saying that.
At which point, I feel like, you know, the usher needs to be like, "If you don't know who you are, let's go through your wallet and let's figure out who you are, and we'll get you home.
We'll take you to the mall just so you can find yourself."
But the craziest story about Lauren Boebert is apparently she's dating a Democrat who has a club that has drag queens that sing. So I am very confused what is going on with Boebert, and I don't know if that's a legitimate story or if that's like National Enquirer level.
Yeah.
But I'm asking, like, what is she doing at the Beetlejuice musical, and how does she know all the words to the music?
I didn't know Beetlejuice had music.
I didn't either. I had no idea that there was a musical. So I felt like a complete idiot where I was like, oh, wow, that's a thing.
Yeah, because I first saw it and then she got thrown out of Beetlejuice. I go, are they running bad 80s movies again?
That would be cool, right? Like if you had a big screen Beetlejuice, I would go to that.
I mean, you know, there's a strike going on after all. And I'm not opposed to bringing back some of the classics. And that's what I thought it was. And then I found out it was a play and that she was actually videotaping parts of it, which you're not supposed to do. But again, you know who she is, right?
Do you know who I am? No, we really don't.
Want to play a little game. Want to play a little game called Where Are They Now?
Oh, God.
You know, the Republicans say how much they, and especially the Q folks, how much they care about the children. This Texas pastor, a guy named Alan Murphy, raped a child under the age of 14 and is going to get a plea deal that will not put him in jail at all. And not
acceptable.
Not going to require him to register as a sex offender. Where's the outrage?
Oh my God. That's absolutely, where's the outrage? And where is the civil suit as well? Like if this guy's one of those mega church pastors, my guess is that he's probably got a good chunk of change. So, you know, his survivor deserves to have a lot of that.
And where are the gun nuts? Today, Hunter Biden was charged with gun charges. Where are the gun nuts? Where are the gun nuts saying that, you know, it's not a peep out of the NRA, not a peep out of the people that I work with who are all have arsenals. Nothing, not a word about Hunter being charged for a gun crime.
And this is actually something that they should be up in arms about, pardon the pun, because this is actually one of those weird laws where it's only applied if there is another underlying law that has been broken. So in this case, the underlying law is that he had a gun as a drug addict, which is actually not a law anymore because it just got overturned at the Court of Appeals like 3 months ago. So it's actually not that cannot actually be an underlying law that's going to end up in the Supreme Court for next year that they're going to decide. So the idea that he lied on a form cannot necessarily be charged unless he has that underlying crime, and the crime is that he owned a gun. So as a drug addict. And so it's like, you know, if you guys are going to start saying that you're okay with this, then the next step is let's start drug testing people whenever they're trying to buy a gun.
Yeah, I mean, because that's where my mind went. And do you have to be an addict? And is a user different from an addict?
That's a good question, too, because it specifies that you're, I think it says like a drug abuser.
Yeah.
So then it becomes this language about what is considered abuse and what is not.
Yeah, I mean, using it exactly the way it's supposed to be used.
In a lot of the states where they're passing legalization of marijuana laws, they have written into the laws that you cannot apply for any kind of a gun permit. Like in Oklahoma, if you have a pot card, you cannot apply for any kind of concealed weapons permit. You can't get a gun. I mean, and that blows my mind too, because it's just like, again, with the Second Amendment people, you say that this is such a huge deal, but whenever it comes to like being able to parse out who doesn't get a gun, you seem to be fine with it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, especially with, you know, most of the people I know who have smoked pot, they're kind of mellow. They're kind of people I don't think, you know, we'd be okay having guns. Now, my drunk friends with guns, those are problem people.
Right. I feel like the pot friends are just going to be like, yo, man, it's all good. Like, that's the thing I always thought was funny, the idea about driving under the influence of marijuana. I just feel like you'd be going very slowly, you know, whereas if you're drunk, you're like all over the place. And so, yeah.
But you know, what's interesting to me is you know, I had this thought today, and maybe you'll come along with me on this. Maybe you won't. I've been watching the Republicans go after Biden at every opportunity over Hunter, and Hunter's got some real problems. Yeah, he's done some illegal stuff. He's going to have to, if he did the crimes, he's going to have to do the time. There's no question about that. I've said he's a degenerate, you know, and I'll stand by that. But I look at Joe and I look at all the stuff that this guy has done. This is what a good father does. At least in my mind, you know, the phone calls, the constant phone calls, the constant contacts, you know, even when you're busy, this is what a parent does. And it popped into my head today. You know, the question, is it just that conservatives are really crappy parents and really have no idea how to raise a child? I know they've got child fetishes. We want them born, you know, we want them pumped out, but we don't know what to do with them because we're not going to feed them. We're not going to clothe them. We're not going to give them an education. We're not going to get them health care. We're not going to do any of those things, but we're going to make sure they're born. It just made me think today that they're really crummy parents and that this now makes sense.
That may very well be the case. And it seems like the big discussion today has been, you know, why is it that Joe Biden, instead of sort of like distancing himself from his son, why instead is he embracing him? And for anybody who has had an addict in their family, if you get them off drugs, the most important thing that you can do is to make sure that you're in constant contact and care and making sure that there is not a relapse there, that there's not a reason for relapse. Like, you look at what was going on in Hunter's life at that time, like his brother was dying, like there was a lot of trauma happening. And so like making sure like that your family member is in a good place is important. And so instead of, you know, Biden sort of shoving his son away, he's really just embracing him and pulling him a lot closer. And I think that's a perfect example of good parenting.
No, and this is where my mind went today, because I'm thinking about it. I'm going, you know, what if I'm in this situation? You know, what do I do as a parent? And I do exactly what Joe's doing. You stand. There's some things that are more important than politics. There are some things that are more important than today's news cycle. And you know, I give the guy credit, man. And I think this is something that we all should be giving him credit for. Now, look, if there's a smoking gun that, yes, he got the $10 million from the Chinese, that's a whole other thing. But there's nothing to say that actually happened other than, you know, some fantasy coming out of Comer and some of the other ones. All this has really been about is attacking Biden for one reason, because Democrats, rightly so, impeached Trump twice.
I would say it's just the fact that he won. I don't think it would even matter if Trump was impeached or not. The fact that he's in the White House means that they have to do whatever it takes. Just the fact that Hillary Clinton was running, they did the Benghazi hearings and were hammering her like crazy and then bragging about how they knocked her poll numbers down. So I think they have sort of recycled that idea. It's Comer's hearings are just Benghazi hearings twisted around in another way.
So this, we've got an impeachment inquiry coming. What's this going to look like, you think?
Well, it's not going to look anything like what the Democrats did, because it's not actually an impeachment inquiry. That's the weird thing, is bless their hearts, the great Justice Department of Donald Trump's administration passed this whole thing that says that if you're going to actually impeach somebody, you have to perform a vote of the entire Congress voting to impeach. Otherwise, you don't have access to all of the information that you necessarily would, like, you know, under an impeachment law. So they think that they're going to have this impeachment inquiry and have access to all of this stuff that they can subpoena. It's going to end up in court, I think, because I think the administration could be like, no, this isn't a legitimate impeachment because you never voted on whether to open an impeachment inquiry.
Well, they don't have the votes. I mean, clearly
they don't.
If they would have voted, if they had the votes, they'd have voted.
Exactly. And that's the problem, is McCarthy was bragging, you know, like, what was it, like Sunday or Monday, you know, oh, you know, we're going to vote on this. We're going to vote on this. And then all of a sudden, whoops, no vote. So what has happened between now and then? And I think it's obviously that he had some of his caucus members coming to him and like, dude, I don't support this. This is crap.
No.
You guys don't have anything.
I was reading an article the other day that said the 18, there are 18 congressional districts in California that Biden won that Republicans, you know, are the representative of.
It's nationwide, I think.
Five of them are really vulnerable.
Yeah. And that doesn't include redistricting issues, because we've got a fight, obviously, down in Alabama. You've got a redistricting fight in North Carolina. There's some sketchy stuff going on in New York. Like, there are a couple of places where we may end up with maybe one or two more Democratic seats. And if you've got, you know, a California district where Joe Biden won that district and, you know, a Republican won just by the skin of their teeth, and now you're going to do an impeachment and the voters are just like, this is crap, then you're going to end up, you know, winning like five seats, and that's the ball game.
Should be fun and entertaining.
It would.
To say the least. Now on the Trump front, did you happen to catch the Megyn Kelly interview? And I got to tell you, I think I'm much harder on him if I'm Megyn Kelly after the whole bleeding out of the eyes thing.
Right? I really thought that she would be a little bit more, you know, no, harder on him, but less friendly. You know, like I would have just been kind of rude, or made some like really inappropriate jokes about, you know, oh, is that blood on you?
No, she knows, you know, what, like, color, she knows what colors are in her eyes.
Right.
Oh, that's green.
Seriously. But one of the main things that was crazy about that interview is I don't feel like she really pressed him on anything.
No.
But he seemed very triggered by her questions about the documents and was just like, you know, I can have those. Like, it's very Tourette's sort of, where he's just like his immediate sort of no collusion, perfect phone call, Russia. Like, it's just it is this soundbite thing happening in his head. Like, you remember the Staples buttons that you hit? That was easy. It's just like Trump hitting those buttons over and over and over again, so it says something insane every time, where it's like, you know, no collusion, witch hunt, perfect phone call. And so now it's like, I can have these documents. These are my documents. I can have them.
Finally, I got to get your thoughts on Vladimir Putin. Vlad evidently, you know, came out and said that, you know, basically, you know, took Trump's side. It's, you know, it's a political hit job kind of thing. And immediately Trump, you know, grabs onto it. When in our politics did it become okay to cozy up to an authoritarian warmonger? When did it be okay for us to, you know, to take that on as something that, because I was thinking about it today, you know, the political careers that were ruined by just minor things. Dan Quayle misspelling potato in front of a classroom. Dukakis wearing a military helmet and looking like a little kid in a tank. You know, Gary Hart, you know, got caught with his pants down. I mean, we could spend, you know, all day just going through things that were minor, that, you know, Howard Dean with that, you know, scream because he didn't have a voice left. This guy takes basically the comments of a dictator and goes, yeah, I'm right there.
Which is pretty much because anybody who compliments him, he will embrace. He is so easy. And I think that Putin is very well aware of that, where it's just like, you just flatter him and he's going to embrace you. People who are smarter than me, who know about foreign policy, were talking about this and saying that this is kind of Putin's only option at this point, where, you know, he's completely screwed up on Ukraine. He's losing. It's not going to end well for him. And so he's got to come up with some way that he can win something. And it may very well be that he fights to get Donald Trump elected again. And it might work.
Are you surprised with all the Republicans who have come out on the side of Putin on this? And
yes,
I mean, are you I'm literally shocked at the number of, and it makes me wonder. I look at someone like Tulsi Gabbard and, you know, I'm going, whose payroll is she on?
Yeah, well, obviously, I think she's on that payroll because it's so weird. You know, it's like, it just doesn't make sense for somebody in their history, you know, like their whole history in life working for, especially her working in the military. And then all of a sudden she's pro-Putin and you're like, what happened?
I mean, because Putin said what's happening with Trump is a persecution of a political rival for political motives. This shows the whole rottenness of the American political system, which cannot claim to teach others about democracy. Now, this is a guy who throws people out of windows. This is a guy who lawn darted the head of the Wagner Group. This is a guy who gave a polonium 210 tea mixture to a journalist. I mean, you know, I don't know that you want to cozy up to that.
I don't understand why you would. I mean, you're talking about somebody who, if, you know, one of his buddies gets arrested in another country, they're going to kidnap an American so that they can do a hostage negotiation and a swap. I mean, that is his MO.
Yeah.
And that is how we ended up with a Wall Street Journal reporter behind bars in Russia who, now they're saying, oh, he's a spy. It's like, really?
Here we go.
Really?
Here we go again. But Sarah, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff. Make sure you check out the website, rawstory.com. Sarah Burris, reporter. Thanks, Sarah. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have an awesome weekend.
You as well. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1929. That was the day that Ella Mae Wiggins was gunned down on her way to a rally of striking textile workers in North Carolina. Ella Mae was born in the mountains of Tennessee. Her father was a lumberjack who was killed on the job. She and her brother had entered the textile mills to help support their family. She married another mill employee and they had 7 children. When her husband left, Ella Mae struggled to keep her family afloat. When the Great Depression came, textile mill workers were subject to the, quote, stretch out. Owners demanded that fewer workers quicken their pace to produce the same results. In response, textile workers began to organize and strike in Gaston County, the heart of the Southern textile industry. Ella Mae became a local leader of the National Textile Workers Union. She advocated for organizing both white and black workers. She became known for leading the other workers in song. One of her most poignant songs was The Mill Mother's Lament. The lyrics told her personal struggle of a mother trying to support her children. On the day she was killed, Ella May was in a truck heading to the workers' rally. They were met by an armed mob deployed by the mill owners. The unarmed workers turned their truck around, but the mob chased them and gunned down Ella May. Five people were charged, but they were acquitted of her murder.
We leave our homes in the morning. We kiss our children goodbye. While we slave for the bosses, our children scream and cry.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society.
You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.